This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into this New Books Network podcast. My name is Catriona Gold, and I'm a PhD candidate at University College London. Today, I'm privileged to be speaking with Mark Nokas about his fascinating new book, The Politics of Immunity, Security and the Policing of Bodies, which was published by Verso earlier this year, that is 2022. Mark is Professor of the Critique of Political Economy at Brunel University in London, and is most well known for his previous work on police power and security. Mark's previous work has been incredibly useful for my own research and teaching, so I'm very excited to be speaking with him today about this new book. So without further ado, thank you for joining me, Mark.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Well, I'm hoping we can start with you telling us a bit about yourself, your academic trajectory, what you've been working on before now leading up to this book, and maybe how the book connects with that. So that's a pretty broad question. But I'm wondering if there's, what kind of connections there are with your previous work, or whether this book is a new direction for you. So tell us a bit about that.
Sure. Well, it's a new direction in some ways, but in many ways it's a continuation of work that I've been doing for 20 plus years now. And I'll come to the new direction in just a moment. My work way back as a PhD student was an attempt to rethink the state civil society distinction, and out of that I became interested in the concept of police, and then I developed that argument which appeared into a critique of police power. And as I was working on that book, I became interested in the intersection between policing and security. And so I developed the argument into what became a book called Critique of Security from 2008. And since then, I've been developing the argument in different ways. I've been connecting arguments about police power to the idea of war power, trying to synthesize the two concepts together, again, trying to rethink this in relation to the state and how the state polices capital and polices bodies. So there's been a kind of constant theme of security, police, war in my work. And this book, Immunity, Politics of Immunity, is very much about trying to connect the idea of immunity to the idea of security. But at the same time, there's also been a theme in my work, which is an interest in arguments around bodies, how we imagine bodies. And by bodies here, I mean not just physiological bodies, but bodies such as corporate bodies and, of course, the body of the state. And one of the things that comes out of the politics of immunity is a kind of question of, you know, what happens to our political imagination about the state once we have the concept of immunity? You know, how does our imagination of the body politic shift once we think about bodies in general through the lens of immunity? So in lots of different ways, the concept of immunity picks up on various arguments that I've made over the years. But of course, it takes it in a very new direction as well, which is what you intimated earlier. It takes me into the world of medical humanities, of the history of ideas outside my usual range of interest. It, as you know, the book picks up on psychoanalytic ideas about how we imagined the psyche in relation to the somatic. So it takes my work in a new and, for me, what was quite exciting direction.
Right, that's great. I'm wondering if to sort of ground. Okay, so we have this point of departure, working with some new concepts, new material. But I'm wondering if we could, before we get onto that, if we could talk a bit more about how you have conceived of security in your previous work, because it does connect, and I think it would be helpful to get that context in here. What is security to you?
Okay, so the book is called The Politics of Immunity, but it is very much about the concept of security. I became very concerned 20 plus years ago about the ways in which security was being articulated and had been articulated as the grounds of state policies, the grounds of what we might call loosely intervention, but it's in a sense too weak a term, that security was the terrain on which the state administers civil society, transforms political subjects. And I tried to develop that into what became the book Critique of Security, to argue that we need to resist the imposition of security in our world. We need to try and think politics outside of security or beyond security, because as soon as we start thinking politics through the lens of security, it's very easily appropriated by what I call the security industry. And by the security industry, I don't just mean capitalist corporations. I also include in the concept of the security industry the state itself. So there's an industry, an industry that is kind of simultaneously economic, social, and political, which imposes security on us, that makes us think that the only way we can imagine the world is through the lens of security, that treats security as the highest of all virtues or principles. And I think, you know, that's a problem. So I was trying to engage in a critique of security in order to try and, if you like, begin to imagine politics differently. You know, in other words, a politics of emancipation, or even, if you like, a politics of revolution, you know, would not be conducted, should not be conducted through the principle of security, through the lens of security. In other words, you know, we should be thinking about setting ourselves up against security.
Right. That's really helpful. And if people wanted to read more about kind of read more of this earlier work, where would on security, or perhaps even on police power, where would you recommend they start?
Well, are you talking about my work?
Yeah, your work.
Yeah,
so absolutely.
My book, Critique of Security, came out in 2008. I would direct them there. Last year, 2021, there was a new edition of a book that I first published in 2000. The original book was called The Fabrication of Social Order, A Critical Theory of Police Power. It came out last year with the subtitle in the title, transferred to each other. So it's now A Critical Theory of Police Power. That develops the argument about security, but very much through the lens of police. 2014, there was a book called War Power, Police Power, which tries to synthesize the concepts of war and police as a way of thinking about the state and capital. But I would also say if people, you know, wanted to think about these things not directly through the lens of police, war, security, they could go to a book called The Universal Adversary, which is about this category produced by the national security state in the US, where they tried to imagine an enemy which they, you know, didn't want to name specifically because that was annoying too many people, because it always intimated that it was a kind of Muslim or a kind of entity, which tries to explore the arguments about security and police and war through a series of figures that the state constantly finds itself fighting wars against. So, for example, witches or pirates or zombies. And so, you know, that becomes a kind of argument about security and police that is conducted through the images that these figures conjure up, that the these figures have conjured up both in the history of political thought, but also now, right? So, you know, what is it about the zombie that is so fascinating to us now? You know, what is it that's happening when we're being trained to imagine ourselves as, you know, needing to fight and kill zombies in the apocalyptic universe? So readers interested in that more kind of, if you like, cultural side of things could always go to could go to that book. Obviously, the main book I recommend is the new one, of course.
Yeah, of course. We're getting to that. Sorry, Mark. I think it's really important to get that sense of what you've been. I mean, because you have this incredibly impressive body of work, and some of which is, I mean, because you sort of range from, these more detailed books, but you've also written sort of shorter pieces, right, for other publications. I'm thinking, you know, there's one in Radical Philosophy, right, 2000, Against Security, which is from experience an incredibly useful teaching aid and sort of a good primer too, right? So, yeah, I want people to go and look at your earlier work too. And now let's get to the book, which is equally fascinating. So what I want to know before we really get into it is, you know, why was this book necessary? You know, what are the stakes of this concept of immunity that you discuss in the book? I mean, why immunity? This isn't, as we were talking about just before the interview, you said, well, this isn't a book about COVID per se, anything like that, although it's very, very timely indeed. Why does it matter?
Sure. So look, the book has its origins. It's a pre-COVID book. Most of it was written before COVID hit us. It was finished during the first year of COVID. But it has its roots in a very personal experience, which was that in 2015 I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. So as you may have picked up having read the book, there's a few comments in there that point to this, but I don't make it a personal book. In other words, it's not a misery memoir of the kind that might have sold well. I did actually contemplate writing a much more personal book at the time, and then realized it wasn't a genre that I was particularly comfortable with. So the personal is very much buried behind the political in the book, but there are a few moments where I do reveal my hand, so to speak. The thing about being as you know, the book is not just about immunity, it's about the autoimmune disease and how we might think politically with that about security. And we can come to that in just a moment. But I'll tell you the personal background here. When I was diagnosed with this autoimmune disease, which came on all of a sudden, in other words, I woke up one morning and could barely move, I started reading as I was going through the initial consultations in hospital and like. And when I was first diagnosed, I started reading about immunity, right, in the way that one does. You know, you're diagnosed with X and so you think, well, I better get on to understanding what X is. And it's a bit strange because if you pick up the kind of popular literature on your immune system, and if you go into the more kind of scientific, medical, biological literature on the immune process. It's a bit strange because you end up reading books about politics, in that all of the images that writers use to describe the immune system are deeply, deeply political. So you'll find the immune system being described as a bit like, you know, Hobbes's Leviathan, right? This massive security state designed to protect everything within it. Or you'll find the immune system described as equivalent to George Orwell's 1984, right? Designed to stop any disruption and designed to keep out all those enemies. Or you'll find most commonly the immune system described as conducting all-out warfare, permanent warfare. And you get this in terms of its popular images, right? Your white blood cells launch attacks on viruses and so forth. But you also find it embedded in the literature. So literally, you can pick up a book on the immune process and find references to Carl von Clausewitz's On War. So it was a bit strange. I was there trying to learn about, you know, what was going on with my body, and was suddenly reading about these figures in the history of political thought, or these images from politics, which resonated with me, given my interest, my previous interests. So I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. I need to go into it a little bit more. So I started doing some more reading. I read up those political thinkers whose work I had known to be on immunity, but I hadn't really expressed that much interest in. So, for example, Nicholas Luhmann, the social theorist who organizes a lot of his arguments about society through the idea of society as having an immune process to protect it, or the Italian philosopher Roberto Esposito. So I started doing some kind of more general reading, if you like, more philosophical reading. And then I came up against the kind of central conundrum, which was both a conundrum for me and also the kind of entry into the book, which is this, right? The autoimmune disease is a disease in which the immune system attacks part of the body, right? So if you take something like rheumatoid arthritis, in rheumatoid arthritis, the immune system attacks the body's linings, mostly its linings in the joints, and it destroys those linings. Yeah, so you end up in incredible pain. Now, there are a whole range of different immune diseases, right? 70, 75, 80, no one really knows, but there's lots of them, and more and more diseases or disorders are getting increasingly classified as autoimmune. So, for example, MS used to be thought of as neurological, but now it's being understood as an autoimmune disease. Okay, so we have a conundrum that's initially personal, right, in the sense that something weird is going on with your body, right? My body is attacking me. This goes against everything we know about what our bodies are supposed to do, right? And in particular, what our immune system is supposed to do, because we are constantly told that our immune system is there to protect us or defend us or give our body security, right? In other words, my security system, the immune process, has turned against me. It is trying to destroy me. Okay, now, on a very personal level, when you say to doctors, how does this happen? What's made it happen? They all go, don't know, right? What causes it? We don't know. Well, there's an interesting discussion to be had there around the relationship between the psyche and the somatic, which I try and do a little bit in the book. Okay, now, this poses a problem politically, of course, as well, right? We've got a problem that is as physiological. Why does the body do this? We've also got a problem that is, if you like, psychoanalytical. What is it about myself that I have opened the door for my body to start destroying myself? Right? That's not just a physiological issue to be treated with the various drugs that one takes. That is a deeply psychoanalytic issue. Yeah. We're engaged in self-destruction when we should be engaged in self-defense or self-protection. Okay. But politically, this is where the book kind of took as its starting point. What we seem to have here is a security system attacking the very thing it's meant to secure. Yeah. Now, if that applies to this body, this physiological body, we might also think of it as applying to the body politic. Because, of course, one of the things we know from studying security, right? This is, you know, one of the things that you do, yeah? One of the things we know is that security systems have an incredibly common tendency to start attacking the very thing they're meant to be protecting, they're meant to be securing. In other words, self-defense, self-protection turns into self-destruction. And we don't seem to have an answer for this. Of course, my answer is the critique of security and imagining politics outside of security. But within the framework of the world we live, there is no political answer. So this took me in a direction which it sets me up against a lot of the political philosophical thinking about immunity, which tends to say, look, an autoimmune disease is... The image you get in the literature is the autoimmune disease is like a civil war in the body, or the autoimmune disease is like a military coup where the military have taken over the body. None of those ideas really make any sense, right? Because in a civil war, you have to have two fighting forces, right? In a coup, there has to be a reason for the military to take over, yeah? But in an autoimmune disease, it seems it's almost senseless, right? There's a kind of senseless slaughter of the body taking place in the name of security, in the name of security that's gone mad, yeah? So it's not a civil war. It's not a coup. It's just an outright attack by the security system on the very thing it's meant to be securing. And this strikes me as this struck me at the time as a way to develop the critique of security that I'd been working on for many years previously. That in other words, we could now push this argument into the realm of thinking about the body politic. And I should say that also one of the reasons for this was because even prior to COVID, a lot of the thinking that was being done about security was being done through the lens of immunity, right? So I give examples, as you know, from in the introduction to the book, not only from security intellectuals talking about how we need to immunize the body politic, but also from places like Facebook, right? Facebook's security system is called by Facebook the Facebook immune system. Right. So there was this constant connection being made by the state, by the state's intellectuals, by security intellectuals, and by corporations and their security operatives. There was this constant connection being made between security and immunity, that the idea was that we could better secure our system by imagining it through the lens of immunity. Sorry, that was a slightly long answer to your question.
No, that's great. That's really fantastic. I think that gives us a good grounding. I'd like to ask how you went about researching the book, you know, because it is so wide ranging in the sort of literature it's drawing on and the sort of, I mean, empirics, right? How did you approach that?
Yeah, I mean, I approached it in a sense. In using much the same unscientific methodology that I've used in a lot of my work, which is kind of read everything and follow hunches. And a lot of it was based on a hunch. Some of them didn't come off, but some of them came off very well, I think. Just little things like, you know... For example, there's three chapters in the book organized around the notion of system. And I had no idea originally when I set about trying to think, well, maybe there's a book here, which I originally thought, well, maybe there's a nice short book here. And it became actually a very long book. you know, I had no idea that I would be writing three chapters on the concept of system, but, you know, just reading something and I discovered that, you know, the idea of the immune system did not exist prior to 1967, right? Now, that's quite remarkable given how much we use the term and how natural it seems for us to think about the immune system as a system. It's remarkable that in one sense it took so long to think of it, an immune process as an immune system, but it's also remarkable given that, you know, for example, we have a longer history of thinking about, for example, the nervous system, right, which goes back centuries. But one of the things that struck me was that, well, the immune system was imagined as a system in the heyday of systems theory. And so I started to try and follow a hunch that actually maybe the concept of the immune system was a kind of a symptom of the systems theory that was around at the time, and maybe it was also somehow an expression of that theory. And so I followed that hunch, and indeed that turned out to be the case. So you discover that, for example, the idea of information that is so central to systems theory becomes central to immunology and the idea of the immune system, that the immune system is, if you like, passing information from one part of it to another, passing information from one part of the body to another. And so a lot of the time I was simply following hunches. Some of the time I was following leads from things that I've read that I thought, well, I'm going to follow up on this and see where it takes me. And other times I just ended up going down avenues that became interesting to me in and of themselves and then became useful. So, again, as you know, there's a discussion there about the autoimmune disease there's a discussion about how useful it might be to imagine the autoimmune disease as a manifestation of the death drive. And, you know, reading Freud on the death drive again gave me a way back into the work of Sabina Spielrein, who had first thought about the death drive. And it turns out that Sabina Spielrein had been reading none other than Eli Metchnikoff, who was one of the first immunologists. And reading Metchnikoff's more, if you like, philosophical/political work, one discovers that Metchnikoff had played around with the idea of a thanatos, the idea of a death drive. So suddenly, although the autoimmune disease wasn't really considered at that point, right? People in the late 19th century, people were thinking generally that this couldn't happen. And although Freud doesn't make much of it, there seems to be a connection between the early immunologists or early immunological thinking and psychoanalytical thinking. And so there's an argument in the book about the death drive and the autoimmune disease. And that was really based entirely on a combination of just, you know, following a hunch and then following some leads and seeing where I ended up.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Right. Yeah. That's yeah, I think, I mean, you end up in some really interesting places. So I think it worked out. And it's nice to hear you sort of talk about, yeah, how sort of the process of writing and researching, you know, went together there. And it wasn't like you came in knowing exactly what you were going to do. You sort of followed it where it led. Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, how did, yeah, so you decided to structure the book. You've got these, yeah, it is broadly about these systems. How is it you moved from sort of the immune system to, you know, you end up at nervous systems, and then finally at this final chapter, immunity's fiction, which we were just talking about earlier. I was saying I thought it struck me as a sort of a genealogy of the concept of immunity was part of what you were doing here. Yeah, how did you decide to like order the book in that way, you know, building towards, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it being read as a genealogy of immunity as a concept. There is a little twist, which is that, of course, immunity is this. It's such a fascinating concept, right? Because it has its origins in Roman law, and not medicine. And it's only in the 19th century that medicine, biology, starts thinking about bodies through the idea of immunity. So if it was a kind of straight genealogy, it might well begin with Roman law, but actually the discussion about Roman law doesn't come until the final chapter, where I try and use the history of immunity through the Roman period and then the early modern period, and how it shifts towards having a focus on security. I try and use that as a way of talking about the kind of immunities that ambassadors had and embassies had as a way of protecting them from activities that are engaged in as ambassadors. And what I then try and do, as you know, is I try and say, well, actually, what we need to do is to recognize that officers of war and police, in other words, soldiers and police officers, can be imagined as, if you like, ambassadors of the state. And this is the very reason that they have the very immunity that we find so troubling when it comes to them committing acts of violence. And that in the final chapter is set against the kind of myth, the fiction of civilian immunity, where we're constantly told civilians have immunity in war, and yet constantly discovering on our television screens that civilians are being killed left, right, and center far more than soldiers during wartime, if there is such a thing as in a non-wartime. So it is in one sense a genealogy, but the very, very early incarnations of immunity in Roman law don't really come into play until later in the book. So I don't mind it being called a genealogy, but I think it's trying to do more than that. It's trying to take the previous arguments about security in a new direction, and it's trying to say, look, you know, what happens when we imagine the body politic through the lens of immunity? So you, for example, just a minute ago picked up on the fact that it talks about nervous systems. Yeah. So there's an interesting difference between the idea of nerves and the idea of immunity when it comes to imagining body politics. The nervous system as a political idea has a long, long history, right? Going back into early modern thought. So you can find, you know, Hobbes and Smith, for example, talking about what we would now call the nerves of state, right? The nerves of the body politic as kind of having a nervous system, but also in some sense being a nervous system. Yeah? And for someone like Smith, you know, that the nervous system of the body politic is deeply connected to the nervous systems of human bodies. Yeah, that it's something about our nervous systems that gives us a certain kind of sympathy for others. Okay, so we can imagine the body politic in that way, but what then happens when immunity becomes a biological or medical idea? Well, it's not unsurprising to find that the body politic is then imagined as an immune system. Okay, so we've said a little bit about that already. We can take it in a different direction now, though, right? So one of the interesting things that's occurred in the last 30, 40 years is that a number of people from different backgrounds have tried to say, look, rather than imagine the body as a series of distinct systems, we need to imagine the body as having these systems connected. Now, this seems to me deeply uncontroversial, right? It's if you like, it's bleeding obvious that that's the case, right? So if you take, for example, the relationship between the nervous system and the immune system and the hormonal system, we all know full well that that these are connected, right? When we're nervous about something, you know, our bodies respond in a certain kind of way. When our bodies are behaving in a certain kind of way, our psyches respond in a certain kind of way. But, you know, the medical establishment has kind of resisted this idea for a long time. Now, in the last 30, 40 years, a body of work has emerged which has pushed these systems together and said, look, we really need to be thinking about they used various terms originally, and the term they seem to have settled on is psychoneuroimmunology. Okay, so psychoneuroimmunology says, you know, the neurological system as the system of nerves is connected to the immune system, but they're also connected to the psychic system and the other meaning of nervousness, the emotional meaning of nervousness. You know, the idea that nerves are not just the neurological nerves, but also something to do with stress or burnout or depression, anxiety. Okay, so what that body of work has done is said, well, now we can imagine things like, to take a recent book, The Inflamed Mind, by Ed Bulmore. Yeah, the idea that inflammation as an immune response is also psychic, right? We can imagine inflamed psyches, and we can imagine how nervousness as emotional distress, anxiety, burnout, depression, how that impacts on the body, how the immune system responds to that stress. Okay, so as well as the idea of the autoimmune disease as an expression of the death drive, we might also think about the autoimmune disease as an expression of stress, anxiety, depression, burnout. Right? Okay. So that in itself is interesting in terms of how we imagine immunity. But now we can give it a political twist. What happens when we imagine the nervous state, right? Not just nerves of state, right? As in the sinews that hold the body politic together. But what happens when we imagine the nervous state? What happens when we imagine England on the verge of a nervous breakdown, France on the verge of a nervous breakdown, the capitalist system on the verge of a nervous breakdown, right? All of which, you know, is examples of terms that one finds time and again in journalism and political writing, that such and such system is on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Well, if we take seriously the idea that nervousness in the body can result in an autoimmune response and therefore the immune system attacking the body itself, we can also perhaps draw a political parallel here. Right, that the nervous state responds by developing its own political autoimmune disease where its security system spirals out of control. Right, in other words, it's a kind of, if you like, an anxiety within the state, a stress within the state, if you like, almost a political burnout within the state system that makes its security system overreact to its own body. Right, that's where I'm trying to go with this as a kind of as a form of political imagination. Yeah, so we can then draw together the idea that The state itself is nervous, on the verge of a nervous breakdown. And as a result, enabling its security processes to overreact.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a, yeah, there may be a connection here with the last interview I did. I just want to, I'm going to boost that, you know, while I'm here, which was with the two of the women who authored the book Deep Deception, which is about the kind of ongoing spy cops scandal in the UK. And I think there's some really sort of important frameworks here in this book in terms of the thinking, especially this is autoimmunity concept about how, you know, policing or other manifestations of security can sort of seem to get out of control or act in a way that doesn't make a huge amount of sense, you know, if the rationale is to protect the population necessarily, right? I think there's a connection there. I cannot articulate it very well on the fly, but hopefully our listeners will be able to. But in terms of how these units take on a sort of life of their own as well.
Well, and also that they engage in activities which destroy parts of the body politic that they're meant to protect, right? So the victims in question there, you know, it's difficult to imagine the kind of damage that those people must feel or have suffered in terms of having their lives, I don't know what the word is, destroyed in many ways in the ways that those police officers destroyed those lives. Yeah. But where this connects is not just, if you like, officers of the state security services destroying the very human beings they claim to be protecting, right? Where immunity comes into this is that virtually, I think, well, as far as I know, in those cases, all of those police officers have gone unpunished, right? In other words, they have been given immunity for the actions that they conduct as officers of the state, as security personnel. Yeah. And this connects to the kind of immunity that we see police officers get time and again when they conduct acts of violence against people on the street or in their houses or on raids or in police stations or in police vans. And it's the same immunity that attaches itself, that gets attached to soldiers when they engage in acts of destruction and violence and damage against civilians in war. Yeah. In other words, we rarely find those, again, going back to this term from earlier, ambassadors of the state being prosecuted for the violences they commit, yeah, because of this thing that they have called immunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for articulating that much better than I would have been able to. So we sort of see how your writing here, you know, helps us to understand ongoing sort of political questions, crises. In a really useful way. You've just sort of full of examples of sort of, you know, policing and in military contexts of this sort of, autoimmune and this sort of questions of immunity and autoimmunity and how they work out in those. And I also think the way you talk about the shuttling of concepts between the biological and political spheres or juridical spheres is really compelling and well evidenced. I think it serves you well. And I think it's a form of analysis that's useful for thinking about other concepts too, right? Because immunity is not the only concept which is sort of transformed or given legitimacy through this movement between conceptual spheres of, you know, the social and the scientific, right? So, there's lots of other examples which of social political concepts which derive some legitimacy through appeals to the natural world as well, right? And So I think there's a lot more we could talk about there, but we should probably move towards wrapping this up. I've taken a lot of your time already. Well, I'm wondering, before we do though, I'm wondering what's next for you.
So I'm really at the moment working on two projects. The first is a book called Pacification, which I've written about before. I've tried to kind of reappropriate the concept of pacification from, if you like, the counterinsurgency theorists, and to use it as part of a development of the argument about the state and security. So it's a concept that we can use to think war and police together, but it's also a concept that we can use to think about how the state shapes civil society in ways that it wants. So that's one project which I'm engaged in. That's kind of got a little bit to go, but it's almost there. And the second project, which is kind of going, but is got much longer to go, is a book that's tentatively titled The Most Beautiful Suicide, which is about suicide. As you know, the theme of suicide appears in the Politics of Immunity book. But this particular project is very specific, which is about suicide through the leap, through the jump. In other words, vertical suicide. In other words, suicide via people jumping from buildings, jumping off of bridges, jumping out of windows, which has a kind of a personal interest for me, in the sense that whenever I'm on a high bridge, my legs start shaking. So there's obviously a combination of fear and therefore desire there. But I think there's something culturally interesting about this idea of the fall, and the falling man, the falling person, a leap into oblivion, but also simultaneously a leap into, well, in a sense, a kind of freedom. So that's the project that's almost also ongoing, but is further down the line in terms of being ready for public viewing.
Okay, well, those both sound absolutely fascinating, and I hope we'll get to speak about them down the line. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up today?
No, I don't think so. I think it's been interesting chatting to you, and I really. Thank you for your interest in the book.
Great. Well, I know our listeners will find the conversation interesting, at least your end of it. I think that's a great place for us to end. So it's been wonderful talking with you today, Mark. Thank you for coming on the show. And thank you, everyone else, for tuning in today. Once again, my name is Catriota Gold, and I've been speaking with Mark Niokios about his new book, The Politics of Immunity, Security and the Policing of Bodies, which was released with Verso in March 2022. I highly recommend picking up a copy from your local bookstore, direct from Verso, or any other ethical retailer, or requesting a copy from your local or university library. So thank you for listening, and thanks again, Mark, for joining me today.
Thank you very much.